Hello, good morning. Welcome to today. I'm Corey Castle. This is Evolving with Corey Castle. And I'm joined by Mike Fresh, my new friend.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little bit tired today. I had knee surgery last week. And the way I've been sleeping, I've just been getting like no sleep the past like week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, you have a feel of exhaustion.
A little bit, yeah.
I can feel that coming off the off the screen. Well, I hope to hopefully pick you up a little bit. I know you said you have somewhere to be today, right? You got an event going on today?
Yeah, one of my favorite promotions to work with, 1CW down in Delaware. It's run by Sean Hardy and Sean Carlson. They've got a big show today. I think it has Ty Awesome versus Tony Deppen. So it's going to be a great show. I love everything they do down there.
All right. Tony Deppen. I don't know him, but I heard of him. I know he was a CZW guy for a minute there, right?
Yeah, I think he's also doing GCW. He's blown up a little bit in the independent scene the past couple years, so they're really trying to get the best matches that they can for Ty, because Ty's a great worker, really smooth, a lot of high flying. He makes it look like it's the easiest thing in the world. And he's just got the pro wrestling title after working his way back up for like the past year and a half. And he just wants to go on all cylinders.
I met Ty when he was first training down at Mark Haro's school.
I love Haro. He's great.
Went down there and worked with him. And it was like, you know, Rob Radke?
Yes.
So they were both kind of new at the time. I don't know. I'm not really sure what year it was, but it was, did you ever know Kevin?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Kevin ran 302. With Deeds. Did you know Deeds?
No.
Okay. So
I was out of wrestling for about a decade, just kind of came back the last 4 years or so. So,
well, I knew that you said to me that we knew each other, and I felt like, oh, I want to know. And I'm the type where like, if I'm excited to talk to you, And I'm not matched with that, like I somehow get a little up in my feels about it. But I might have been like, come on, I'm excited to hear about how we know each other. But it was, you said that you helped with 3PW back in the day, right?
Yeah. So I had a wrestling show that started 2001, literally within like a couple months of ECW folding. Right. Mm-hmm. And you thought when that first happened, I was like, oh man, like I'm literally starting a show in Philly at the worst time. But actually, I think it was probably the best time because I got to see Ring of Honor start as a new promotion and go to like some of the stuff. I got to see CZW right as they were blowing up going into that Cage of Death that year. I got to see MLW form. I saw XPW, you know, come in. But the coolest thing for me is somehow, it's a weird story that I'm still not sure how it happened. 3PW was being run by the Blue Meanie and Jasmine, his girlfriend at the time. And I ended up somehow kind of being the third man for them, where I was doing a lot of the flyering. I was picking people up from airports. I was doing a lot of behind the stage stuff. And that's where I've met a lot of people. I think Drew, I can't remember his last name right now. He's been kind of retiring and unretiring a couple years. local guy. But it was cool because like he was kind of like, you know, getting ready to ride off into the sunset. I'm like, dude, like I remember hanging out backstage at 3PW with you when you were like, you know, starting to learn security as you were like starting to train, and just like popped him.
I went to just a handful of 3PW shows, but I have to say those were like, I felt like I was still brand new at the time. I mean, I was 17, 18 years old, and they ran at the Electric Factory, and I had gone to tons of shows at the Electric Factory as far as concerts and stuff. I was a huge live shows concert nerd. I loved live music. And then when pro wrestling was happening at the Electric Factory, I was like, oh, I gotta be here. And then I think either at that time I had just debuted at CZW, and somehow in my head, wrestling worked like if you work one place, that's the only place you work back then. I think that a little bit of that still sort of exists in the back of other people's minds. A lot of like, probably a lot of old school guys like me, a lot of like the guys who've been around for a really long time, like somehow it's built into our like code that like, this is the one place that you go and, you know, you represent that place. And I think it's time for me to like loosen the grip on that thinking for a minute.
Well, there's still places that do that. I know if you train with Johnny Rods, you're kind of exclusive for him until you're quote unquote done training, and you're not allowed to work the rest of the indies around there. So there are still some people that are like that. For me, though, my biggest thing is with running the wrestling independent is sometimes like explaining to guys like, listen, I try to bring people in from all different places. I'm not trying to make this like, you know, whatever PW part two, like it's needs to be its own separate entity.
It actually happened to me, man. I think like I was subject to the Philly indie wars, I guess, of 2006, probably when PWU was a thing, CZW was a thing, because PWU was Johnny Cashmere and Trent Acid. They ran the Bro Wrestling Unplugged.
Yeah.
And they were running in Northeast Philly, like right around where I live. It was like walking distance from me. Right. So I took that booking right away. And once I took that booking, John Zandig was like, yep, never come back. Never come back.
John was a weird dude. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The first show that I went to for CZW was the night the line was crossed. Or no, take one, which was former Rick Blade hurt himself with his leg. There,
yeah. I remember. There was Lobo got hurt on that show too.
Yeah. And he did a whole interview with me about how CZW is rising up from the ashes of ECW, and like this really passionate interview, but it was right next to the speaker that was like literally the speaker was here to us. And like I'm sitting there trying to interview him. I'm like, we didn't get any usable audio on it.
I laugh a lot about how like the Jesus that promo. That was like when I first started I might have just been starting training at the time. Or like I knew I was a student at the CZW school, and I was behind where the cameraman was, and I saw that and I was like, oh, this is what I'm getting myself into. Like, and he poured the water all over himself. I remember like where my brain was in that moment where I was like, geez, what is this? Like when he like pushed Robbie and he's what do you mean what happened? What are you blind? And it was viral to the locker room of CZW before it was ever viral to Botchamania like it is now. John Zandig had an apartment that he rented out to to Chris Cash and Eddie Valentine. Eddie Valentine was my coach, my trainer.
Yeah.
And they had an answering machine where the outgoing message on their answering machine was, "What do you mean? What happened? What are you blind? Jesus!" And he would have to call them and listen to it all the time because he was their landlord. So it had its own life before it became such a big hit on Matthew's show.
And the first thing that he did that was that went viral, because this shows my age. I was on, and funny looking back to find out that Tony Khan was part of the community too, but the old CZW fans board. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first thing that went viral back then was the small potatoes. People were like people would literally bring like small potatoes with them in bags and crap just to crack other people up in the audience.
Yeah. I would read some CZW fans message boards. I never posted on CZW fans message boards, but my friend Ryan, who eventually went on to be a poster on CZW fans as the supreme douche.
Mm-hmm.
He started his first couple posts. He had his name as CK Corey Castle and was posting about anything and everything. And everyone was going up to me and going, "Oh, why are you posting on the CZW fans message board?" I'm like, "I'm not." And this was at a time where you're not supposed to be a mark. Like the boys, like this shift has changed a lot in the last 20 years. Where like you go from being a fan to then never being a fan of any of it. Like you can't be a mark anymore. It's not allowed. Like when you go.
Yeah, no, I completely remember that. Like, and heaven forbid you had a PWI magazine or one of the wrestling magazines on you, you got ostracized in locker rooms.
Yeah. It's what a shift that has happened in the last 20 years.
It was kind of shocking when I left wrestling around like 2004. Because at that time I had a kid, I needed to get a full-time job, wasn't really able to do what I was doing. And coming back the complete opposite of the way that the locker rooms are, it's amazing now. Because the Wrestling Independent started as a podcast, the amount of people that I would talk to that they became a fan because of the video games originally, or like, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think for me, the biggest shift, and it's one of the things that I was super happy to see, obviously it still needs to get better. Guys need to do a little bit better, but the complete difference in the way that women are treated compared to what they were 2001, early 2000s, I'm sure before that was really rough.
I mean, I'm sure you remember this. Any woman who entered anywhere near a locker room, anywhere near a wrestling building, was automatically labeled a rat and automatically free game to for any of the wrestlers to go and hit on her.
Mm-hmm.
That was automatic. Automatic wrestlers were gonna I brought some girlfriends around. They always got hit on by wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely lost a few girlfriends to the wrestling business. Like that, it sucks up. It sucks up any healthy thing. If it's unhealthy, it gets sucked away from you.
Mm-hmm. Like that. Oh, absolutely.
The way the wrestling business when it was like relationships and stuff. Mm-hmm. For sure. If you brought a girlfriend to a show, especially if you brought her in the locker room, she was getting taken from you.
Yeah. 100%.
Oh man, I'm glad that things are changing for the better, for sure.
Yeah, and it's actually one of the reasons that I'm doing with TWI work that I'm gonna do. I guess the best word that I've used for it is make it gender neutral. Like it doesn't matter. In October, hopefully we're gonna start a tournament for the title for the company. And I've told everyone in the locker room, I've told everyone, like, listen, I want the people that are the best of the best. And it doesn't matter if you're a man, a woman, if you're trans, it, like, whatever you identify as long as you're one of the best, you're eligible for the titles. And I'm trying to do it now with a lot of the matches that I'm doing. You'll notice a lot of matches that are, I don't like the term intergender. It sounds kind of gimmicky to me. So I've been calling it gender neutral because that's really the way that I want to run it. And it's great when you have the Masha Slamoviches and stuff that are getting these opportunities, but it really feels like it's limited to a few different women. And that's been pretty much it around.
So it's like, I'm trying to think of like another, cause for sure, like, advertising it as any other way seems, it can be tricky. Like, I think, like, if you were to say like non-specific or something like gender non-specific or anything like that, it runs the risk of being a little too wordy. If you say unisex, then you got sex right in the word, and like that's weird. Like, because it's wrestling. It's a show. We're oiled up and we're in tights. It's just to have the word sexual, it's completely the opposite. And it, for sure, in my head, it's completely on the opposite side of anywhere sexual to me. And this is a conversation that me and my girlfriend like to have pretty often about how, like, what we do is completely different than strippers or burlesque or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like that. Now, that's completely a different thing. And she's like, well, you know that, like, people who are coming there are sexualizing you. I'm like, yeah, but it's combat sports. You know what I mean? It's an art form. And, you know, not to take away from any of those things, but those are not the exact same thing as what our sport is.
Yeah, no, it's completely different. Unless I was talking to you about them or a little bit earlier off air, unless you ever check out WrestleCore in Vancouver, they have a couple burlesque dancers that might get up in the middle of the show, specifically Calamity Kate, Katie Kroll, who does a lot of burlesque stuff during the shows.
Does she take bumps?
Oh yeah, she wrestles too, but she also, nice. There's a big burlesque community in Vancouver. Another one is everyone's favorite, Naomi. She also does burlesque. Even one of their big referees, Joe King, who's their head referee, he doesn't do burlesque, but he helps out with burlesque shows and stuff and is kind of like the guy that calls it on stage and walks in between everything. So it's been kind of a weird little mix, and same thing with Glam Slam, which is kind of, it's a women's company that's like half burlesque, half wrestling.
Okay, so there are exceptions, but it's still not,
but for the most part I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's the risk to reward ratio is far separate.
Yeah.
For the performance, I mean, there's less. it's weird, man. I talk about the risk of injury. The, like, anytime you're out there as a in-ring performer, you're risking your health and your safety, and you know the fact that I've been able to get by this long, and not have any, I knock on wood every day. I thank God every day. I mean, everything I have at this point, man. So like in 2012, I had to have brain surgery, man. And I got to come back to wrestling only 13 months after it. So anything I get to have now at this point is all bonus, cause it could have way got taken away from me. And I'm grateful every day for that.
Oh yeah, that's amazing to be able to be like that. I think that there's some people that over time, and I think it really takes some time, but there's some people that forget that this is a honor to be able to do, and it's something special. And like, you know, wrestling doesn't owe anybody anything. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you're allowed to go out there and perform for people and show them your art. And there's some people that I think forget that every now and again.
Well, I have to kind of see if I can ask this opinion. What is the opinions that you get from your family and your loved ones when it comes to you, like, going all in on promoting wrestling? And because the outside looking in, wrestling's like, come on, why are you giving that? Like, most people just like play it off, just blow it off like it's fake and it's for kids, and it's like stuff to just kind of give up on before you even give a chance to, because like, come on, grow up. That's like in people's I guess like their small-mindedness, their intolerance to joy. What do you got, a joy intolerance?
Well, for my family, my parents, they saw me loving wrestling growing up. So like I said, when I had my wrestling show, it wasn't just, and this is the wrestling fiasco, which was 20 plus years ago. When I had that, I was actually a radio professional. I had been a news director. I was running WWDBAM 610 over on the other side of Philly. So for me, like, I was actually in radio. Like, you know, right now I'm a high school teacher. One of the classes that I teach is journalism, and it's because I used to be a journalist. So for my family, my parents, it's kind of like something that they've always seen me into, right? Because I got to grow up during that WCW versus WWF era, where it was the Monday Night Wars. They always knew that it was big. For my wife, I'm one of those people that if I get bored, I do dumb things, or like, you know, I always need to have something to do, or like, you know, it's not good for me to just kind of sit still. So for her, she's just like, hey, it's your thing. Go have fun with it. Obviously, because of how much a wrestling company costs, I had to get her blessing to, you know, be able to start running a show. But I mean, she sees that it keeps me happy. She looks at it as something where, like, you know, if I'm doing this, I'm not out with my friends doing something stupid, because I'm just a stupid guy from Philly. And, you know, so for her, she loves seeing me happy. So it is what it is.
When it came to doing commentary, you had doing with John Hardy, right, for a while now with with 1CW, because I think when you first started running at Constatters, which is walking distance from my Aunt Duggar's house, but when you first started running at the Constatters, I remember asking Craig, and he was telling me, because I'm personal friends with Craig for a while, so okay. Craig Prendergast, and he was telling me that you were the guy who did commentary for 1CW for John Hardy.
Yeah, I've done that for, I think, about a year and a half now. I actually started before then, but the stuff I was doing before, he was just kind of letting me practice. Like, it really wasn't going out anywhere. Like, I was just kind of calling some of the matches just to, like, get the skills and get everything in.
Work the kinks out, bump the rust off.
Yeah. I'm one of those people that, and it's something I get from a lot of people, where they think that I'm just quiet, but really I'm more of an observer of things. Like, I know when I talk, I could get passionate and start talking over people. And, you know, so I try not to do that by being quiet, by listening, to seeing what's going on with everybody. But I have also gained a lot of knowledge, right? Like, you know, I don't think I'm tooting my own horn when I say, like, you know, being backstage when Ring of Honor started, before it even started, and working with those promotions, being backstage for MLW when they started, being backstage for 3PW was a huge learning experience. Even though I'm not a trained wrestler, I've spent time at wrestling schools, the Workhorse Center. I've spent time, Danny Cage was letting me come to the Monster Factory for a long time. And, you know, really listening and learning and diving deep into the online videos that known professionals have put out talking about things, going to seminars with Gabe Sapolsky and stuff. I'm a student of the business. I'm never going to understand stuff maybe the same way a wrestler would, but I kind of a little bit know what I'm talking about. I don't think I'm an expert by any mean. So I think I have a lot of knowledge and, you know, obviously, like I said, I'm a little bit tired right now, but I know how to turn on the passion when it comes to commentary, because that's literally just the kid inside me coming out about how excited they are for everything.
Mm-hmm. I relate. I relate very hard to all that. When it came to knowing the names of moves, did you get a lot of that knowledge through No Mercy from Nintendo 64?
There are some moves that are more newer moves that I don't always call correctly. And if I don't know the specific move of something, if it's like somebody's signature, or like it's something that I just didn't catch, I'll just kind of react to the move. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the other stuff was just watching it over time and watching it over and over and over again. So,
right. Yeah, man, I loved like spending so much time on the create a wrestler thing back mm-hmm. then, and watching all like the red guy versus the blue guy doing moves mm-hmm. to each other in the create a scenes. As far as like learning what all the moves were called in that game. So like you'll like later on watch me, even when I'm like streaming and I'm watching something, I'll be like, what was that? The Overcastle? Oh, he did like the blockbuster in the game. Mm-hmm. They call it the Overcastle. I don't know why, but some things just like sprinkle in to the answers in your brain as far as.
Well, even with that, it's kind of funny. Like, I'm sure you know from how long you've been wrestling, you wrestle someone from even a different part of the country, they might call a move something completely different than what we call it on the East Coast. I mean, you go to England and like almost all the moves are called something completely different.
Yeah, it was weird because like a tackle drop down hip toss spot, which we when I was training, we called it a tackle drop down hip toss. And then like, around like the 2000s, like the late 2000s, it started being called the international, or sometimes being called the universal, but like we always called it tackle drop down hip toss.
Yeah, like, and I think international actually comes from England, mm-hmm. if I'm right. So like, yeah, it's just weird the way some moves like really do change, you know, what they're called. Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because I think when we were training, I'm trying to remember, but we did a warm-up drill that we called reads. We called it reads, but I never saw anybody else do it, or at least never heard anybody else call it that. Like they have like different spots, like with the reads were like you read your opponent. So like, you go running off at the ropes. Don't say a word to each other. Either you duck the clothesline, you duck the elbow, jump over the drop down, or jump under the leapfrog. So you just continue to do the reads back and forth and back and forth. And then that sharpens your ability to read.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that blows you up so quick. I have to say, it gets so blown up so quick. But I've seen other warm-up spots, like other drills. I guess we would call them drills, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of changes to the way the sport is. there's so many good ones and so many not so good ones that have come through, and some of the good ones are really good. Some of the bad ones are just like, it almost is like, and I don't want to I don't want to promote holding people out, but it got to, back in the day, it was like, if you tried out at a school and like, maybe this wasn't really for you, maybe you had certain limitations, like we'd be like, nah, maybe this isn't for you, like go do something else. But now it seems like people got so much money, like from just letting anybody else, anybody who wants to be in, come and be in. It's like we've over included too many people, and it comes to the point where like promoters will say to me, like, why would I pay you this when I could pay this nobody, when I could pay this nobody to come in and do it for nothing, you know? So it's a weird, it became a weird thing where like the fans, like they were like, well, you can't be, when you're in the business, you can't be a fan anymore. It got to the point where the fans were the only ones in the business. And it was like, it took a certain amount of toughness. It took a certain amount of grit to be a professional wrestler. Like you really, really had to like really want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of seems like it gets to the point where people are just happy to be there and they like to coast. And it kind of like clogs up the indies for the real talents who want to do something in the business.
Well, I look at it a little bit different. I think it's nice that some companies do help people try to fulfill their dream, right? Like I've seen some companies where they have people my age training, and the people that are training really aren't looking to do anything. They just kind of want to be on a couple shows and, you know, surprise their family. The thing that I've noticed is you, and I'm very, very, very particular about who I hire for my company. Even though it's new, I try to tell people like, you know, this isn't the place where I want someone to work out. Like, you know, how am I going to be a wrestler? You know, like, what am I going to look like? Because there's a lot of indies where you can do that, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm trying very hard to focus on people that really good matches. I really look for the in-between stuff. And I've seen that there's a lot of independent wrestlers who I see complain about not getting spots. They're really awesome on the moves, and they're almost kind of too cocky about that because they don't work on the in-between stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like they know that they have the look, they know that they can do these amazing moves, but they're not doing the right facials, they're not doing the correct selling when they're supposed to be selling, and they think that they're God's gift to wrestling when it's like, dude, like you have stuff you need to work on. Don't like, yeah, like there's a reason people like
fundamentals that are
Austin. What's up?
I said there are people who, and I'm guilty of this too. Like not to say that I'm currently guilty of this, but for sure, for a really long time, I thought because I was on Fake You TV and on Channel 48 in Philadelphia, that made me better. Like yeah. Somehow. Like there's just one or two like little things here and there that like my fundamentals were okay, but like not like every bit of it. Like I was just like, oh, I got put on TV when I was 18 years old as a wrestler. So that must mean that I'm the shit, you know, and that, you know, time humbles you. And I have to say, I at one point was somebody who maybe did some complaining without giving alternatives or giving ideas, like, but I don't believe that I am that anymore. Like, I
And what I was going to say is, like, you know, there's guys and girls that have been doing this for like 3 or 4 years that act like they know the business and that they know everything. Mm-hmm. But then you listen to the Stone Cold Steve Austins, the Chris Jerichos, the people that had amazing careers that say, no, it takes about 10 years for you to really get it. And there's some people I think that they get it when they're still in the really early steps of their careers. Right. And it also, I also feel bad for people because I pretty much, by the time I announce a show, I pretty much have the whole thing booked. And then I get people that reach out to me and I'm like, oh, you got to wait for like this next show or two to be over. And like, I'll contact you in a couple months and then we can see what happens.
Yeah. I definitely, the more and more I am in the wrestling, in the independent wrestling, I more want to be a part of the full thing. Like, I have writing experience. I've written full shows. I've produced on many shows. Like, I've written movies. Like, I just want to be more than just an on-screen talent as far as like anything I get myself involved with at this point. And if I think maybe I had like maybe an issue because I was trying to kind of speak up and kind of talk about how things can be better. And I was told that I was complaining pretty recently. And so I think when you said they complain about this and that, that like perked me up a little bit. And I was like, hey, I don't complain. Don't complain. Like, I just started getting all super, super itchy butt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Were you at the Electric Factory when the 3PW shows were there?
I think I was at the first one or two shows there. That was about the time that I left.
Okay. Do you know Nick Burke?
Mm-hmm. I knew Nick Burke. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He was I guess one of my mentors, one of my coaches, kind of coming up, and he did the backstage for when Glow ran at the Electric Factory. So I went there and I kind of got to go backstage and see. I didn't care about the ladies at all. I didn't want to watch the show. I wasn't there for the show, but I was like, I'm backstage at the Electric Factory. I've seen so many concerts here. And I was like, oh, look at that. Like, I remember marking out more for the venue
than actually
any of the wrestling.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because that's how people treat the 2300 arena. Like, you know, they're more happy about being there and getting a chance to work there than if, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's this mythical place now. And it's funny because going there, I'm like, man, this looks nothing how it used to look. It was a dingy crap hole, but it was our dingy crap hole.
The first time I was ever there was that Cage of Death 3, that December 15th, 2001. That was the first time I was ever there. That place sucked. Like, there was the upstairs where the crow's nest was. That's not even there at all anymore. The entrance is now, but I guess that there was like a stage up there, and then there was a bathroom with two toilets. Those toilets were always super clogged, and they had been clogged for a long time. Those stairs in the back were all falling apart. There was holes in all the walls. Like, you could definitely get some sort of like infection at any given time.
At one of the shows that I was working there, I was also doing kind of security too. We had to like go in and wrestle two people out of the women's room that were shooting up and like having sex in the stall. And they're just like, what? We didn't know we couldn't do this. Like, that's the kind of people that used to go there sometimes.
All right, fine. Well, at least put a sign up. If we can't do it, put a sign up that says we can't do that. If you want us to not do drugs and have sex with each other, put up a sign that says we can't.
And I feel like that Foreman Mills went out of business after fans bring the weapons matches went out of style.
Yeah. The last time, I don't know if it was the last time I was there. It was for sure. Wait, I'm trying to think. This is probably 2014, maybe the last time I performed there. And the Foreman Mills had been turned into the backstage, had been turned into like the locker room area for the arena. I don't know if it's still like that. I think they opened up some sort of store or something.
Yeah, I think they just opened up a new restaurant next door where the old Foreman Mills was. I haven't been backstage at the new, I call it the new 2300 arena, just because, you know, I'm sure there's some, you know, shows I could work myself backstage at, but I'm not 21 anymore. Like I only do that stuff if I get explicitly invited. Like I don't ever assume. There are some people in the wrestling industry that, you know, show up to a show and assume that they're allowed backstage at every show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a, it's a little bit entitled. I think it's just a tad. But I mean, I think that there's like a certain amount of like desperate thirst that some people have, and look at me, I'm relevant, sort of like it's like the clout chasing social media world that might be what kind of made it okay to be a mark in wrestling, you know, sort of like the posting stuff about everything is like less than 24 hour cycles. You know what I mean? Everything is like, just scroll on to the next. That should be a championship, the scroll championship, the scroll title, the medieval scroll. hear ye, I'm the champion. I have a little scroll opened up.
I'm surprised that there isn't a cosplay championship at this point somewhere.
Well, I mean, there is. I do cosplay pro wrestling.
Oh, that I didn't know.
I've never been the champion, but let's say Aquaman has been the champion, or whatever other characters I've played during that, the Team Rocket, Stooges, but normally it's like at comic book conventions or anime conventions or video game conventions in the area, I'll go and work for this guy, Mike Goldstein. I don't know if you know who that is, but he does the cosplay pro wrestling. I've had Mike on the podcast.
Okay, very cool. And it's funny because going back and wrestling for years, there's always been some kind of cosplay. They just didn't call it that. I mean, I've been to matches where Spider-Man's been there. I've been to matches where, you know, different, like, you know, Freddy Krueger's been there, or Jason.
But everybody always has cosplay inspired gear.
Yeah.
Like I compare wrestling a lot to drag, because it's like they put so much effort and time into customizing what they do and like particulars. I see it like I've watched Drag Race a few seasons, RuPaul's Drag Race, with my girlfriend, and it's like such the same. You know what I mean? Like it's so very similar. But I mean except for we're doing things that could concuss us at any moment. But I don't know.
You know, some of the high heels that they wear and stuff, not falling down,
those death drops. Those death drops are like a power bomb bump. Boom! Yeah. Like no, thank you.
And if I'm right, I think Brody King used to work on Drag Race. Oh, I heard him do an interview where he talked about that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I know you said you hosted a show, you did a lot of broadcasting. As a broadcaster, or at least, because I know I'd asked you probably before we were live, when I said, had you been on a lot of podcasts, had you been guests on lots of podcasts, I want to ask you, being a broadcaster, what's one, your most frequently asked question, and two, what's one question you've never been asked before on a broadcast that you've always wanted to be asked, but you've never had the opportunity to answer?
Frequently asked, I think, is the ones that everybody gets. How'd you get into wrestling? What made you first become a fan? Like, you know, I think everybody asks that. That's kind of like, you know, the go-to for everyone. Honestly, of what I want to be asked, I honestly couldn't tell you. Like, you know, for me, like, I'm such a, I'll just sit back and share stories. I learned a long time ago not to jump in with some of the stories that I have, because I feel like I'm one of those people, I've had a very blessed life. So I have a lot of weird stuff that's happened to me. So I think some of the stuff that I tell is, you know, sometimes it sounds outrageous, or it sounds like, yeah, sure, you did that. Okay. So I when it comes to what I've wanted to be asked, it really is just whatever I get asked. Like, I'm completely fine with anything.
Okay. So what's a like, I guess in it, I'll reword that in. What's a very little known fact about you that you'd like to share today with the audience of Evolving?
Ron Jeremy once asked me to have group sex with him back at his hotel room. 3PW used to brought Ron Jeremy in for, I know he's kind of a controversial guy at this point.
Scandal noted.
Yeah. They brought him in for a wet t-shirt contest, and like, my job that night was kind of to help him out. And it's funny because he's taking pictures with people, and every single broke down, like, you know, guy that, you know, really doesn't do well with women were coming up to him like, oh, because you sleep with beautiful women, I know I can too. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, we all went to dinner. If you've ever been on the Boulevard or Delaware Ave, whatever you want to call it, there's that movie theater that used to be there. I mean, it seems United like almost closed down after COVID.
Yeah, you're talking about the United Artists right there, right?
Yeah, and then there was also restaurants in that same place. Uh-huh. We went to the one restaurant because they stayed open because they were friends with somebody. And one, somehow I ended up in Ron Jeremy's book. If you ever saw his documentary that he did in like the 2000s, he has this book that he writes everyone's name down and like draws how he knows them. And when we go to dinner afterwards, all these girls were like, hey, show me what you have. Show me what you have. He's like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And then I had to drive him back to his hotel, and he had like three girls with him. He was like, hey, Mike, you want to get in on this? I'm like, that is not a story I ever need to tell anybody. I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah, that's the girls that want to go home with Ron Jeremy, I don't want anything to do with them. And I'm good to drop you off. Tuck and roll,
like,
sir.
That was pretty much the entire thing. I was like, nah, dude. I'm like, I'm good. Like, we're good. We're okay.
Were they girls from the restaurant or girls
yeah,
from
the just head? Random girls that were coming up to him in the restaurant.
What I like to do on this podcast, and I think when I started it, I'll tell this story again. I know I've told it a million times, but when I started this podcast, I remember my mom had made this like CD. She had gotten these voicemails burnt onto a CD. It's voicemails from her mother who passed and her best friend who had passed. And she said, you know how like when people pass, you forget what their voice sounds like. You know, they're out of your life. You forget what their voice sounds like. I remember feeling like, I don't want that. I don't want people to forget what my voice sounds like. I don't want people to kind of, when I like to have conversations that are kind of like on the record. So whenever I'm talking to somebody who's like important to me in some way, I want to have that kind of be time stamped right here, mm-hmm. you know? So I've had conversations with friends who are no longer with us on this podcast. And I've had the moments where I tell them important things that I want to make sure is on the record, because this stuff is kind of outliving us a little bit, you know? So with that being said, before I get a chance to really dive too much into it, I want to say, if there's anything you want to tell me, anything you want to say to me, anything you want to ask me, kind of want to ask you, go ahead and do that right here on the record.
Honestly, like, I'm just kind of enjoying the conversation that we're having. I think that we're covering some interesting topics and things like that. For me, I just like conversations. Like, I like seeing where things go. It's the reason that I stopped my podcast, is because I felt like all of my interviews were starting to sound the same one after another. So,
what was the same about them?
Again, it was kind of, you know, a lot of the same questions. It was a lot of the same, you know, conversations, and what started out as something fun got very formulaic after a while.
Well, is it the wrestling podcast?
Yeah. When I had the Wrestling Independent, I think some of the stuff's still on, like Apple like and things like that.
But, yeah. Do you remember when people would do the blog talk radios and you had to like call in? That was like pre-podcasts, where mm-hmm. people would have talk shows on like blog talk radio, and you had to like, it was almost like you're just listening in on somebody's phone call that they're having with them, with each other. I remember doing a bunch of those back then and answering a lot of the same questions, like, what was your first match? What inspired you to get into it? Like, and I remember being like, if I ever start my own show, I'm never going to ask those questions. I'm never going to ask the same, like, roll the dice and this is one of six questions you're going to be asked that everybody gets asked. That's not how I wanted to do it.
And you've been doing this, what, like 7 years now? Like, that's a good run for a show. I think in your thing, like 2017, like that's a really good run.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I mean, I wanted to feel genuine. I wanted to feel sincere. I think I have like a ton of shows that I was inspired by. And I remember listening pretty early on, like right before I started my podcast, I was listening to You Made It Weird, Pete Holmes' podcast. I was listening to that constantly. And he told the story about how he mentioned to his agent that he wanted to start a podcast. And he explained to him what the podcast was. And the agent said, like, oh, that's Mark Maron's podcast. That's WTF. It's already a thing. And he's like, yes, but that's hosted by him, not me. Mm-hmm. I'm somebody different with a bunch of different perspectives. And I took that as in like, well, I can kind of take inspiration from that, considering like nobody else has my story. Nobody else in the world does the exact things that I do the exact way that I do them. So I want to like take that and maybe like, if guests probably don't know who I am most of the time, most of my guests might not know that I'm from wrestling or know much about wrestling. So it's like, I want to kind of inspire people to like put down whatever their prejudgments are of what, like, they'd automatically just think of me from like just watch or just to look at me, to see me, to have a conversation with me online versus like what the reality of it is versus the perception of what that might be. And I would say I'm gonna start saying this on stage. I haven't really mastered the delivery of how I'm gonna do it yet, but I want to say, like, I'd hate me too. Like, look at me. Like, I get it. You, first sight, like, you probably don't like me right away. I wouldn't like me either. I definitely would. Like, this man bun and this tight shirt nerd. this guy is a piece of shit. Like, but adjacent Momoa. What is this awkward Aquaman have to say that's worthy of my time?
Oh, I tell people I look exactly like everybody that they tell you to worry about in the news now. That middle-aged white guy who's just like, you know, looks like they have a lot of strong opinions about things. And I completely understand that.
Yeah. I want to make sure I say to you, man, how much I appreciate you, man, and how much, like, this is the on the record part I was talking about. I want to say the currency of effort, like the currency of time, it's so precious nowadays. It's way more valuable than money. And it goes to saying, like, 2017 is when I started this, like, and I haven't built like a crazy following that you're going to get like instant feedback from, you know what I mean? You're not the only benefit to hanging with me on here is being able to hang with me on here. And I appreciate the fact that you were able to gift me with the currency of your effort and your time.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those things, and I get annoyed when I see it, especially on Twitter with a lot of wrestlers, when they talk about, oh, well, if I'm going to be on your podcast, how much are you going to pay me? And like, I want to be like, don't you understand? Like, these people aren't making anything at all on the podcasts. Like, you're just like, if I think that having you on is going to push my viewership through the roof, I'd pay you. If you're just a guest, it's free advertisement for you.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, man. I have not paid any guests.
And yeah, I don't think anybody should.
I'm gonna admit to this. I'm not gonna say the name of the person on the show, but I'll say it to you after we get off mic. I did pay one guy who I thought he's like a movie star. Right, this guy lives in California, lives in Hollywood, and he's been in tons of movies. I'm gonna pay him to be on my podcast, and then he shows up, and it's just a cell phone, and he's like outside, and he's like smoking cigarettes and doing drugs, while we're trying to do the show and kind of like trailing off, and I was like, wow, I paid for this one. Like, this is valuable lessons that we learned at that point. I'm like, wouldn't you, if you're surrounded by Hollywood and such, wouldn't you have the ability to like sit in front of a microphone in a studio? But, you know, expectations meeting reality is what I just talked about. So it's a whole path of learning lessons.
Oh, and I can tell you, people like Mark Maron don't pay people to be on their show.
Yeah. Like, get Obama on for free.
Yeah, I mean, if I am paying someone, you need to move my numbers. Like, and that's how I feel. Like you have to be somebody that gets interest from the outside. Like, if it's just you being on and like I see the same numbers I look for everyone else, why would I pay you for it?
Right, exactly. Like, and it's like, the podcast has made me no money. Yeah, like, so am I, I'm paying money to have you as a guest on my show for me to not make that back. Like, that's just money I worked for at my job. like, and then it's gone now and it's in your pocket and maybe you're using it for whatever your vices are. I don't know if that sits quite as well with me as it should. Yeah.
And when I was starting my podcast, there was somebody I reached out to, and again, I'm not going to say it on air. And like literally within 30 seconds of me sending an email, I got a email back. Well, how much are you going to pay me for it? I was like, okay, now I'm just never going to talk to you. And like, when I see you at shows, it's just going to sour me on you. Like not anything other than that's the first question you ask. Like,
have you thought about bringing your podcast back?
No, because I'm having more fun doing the promoting stuff. I'm having more fun working on the commentary and things like that. And also for me, the podcast was a lot of work. Like I just don't have the time to sit there, edit it, get everything done for it. And like you said, it also costs money even just to get it on different things. You have some software you have to buy. You have to, you know, worry about this, this, and that. And it was just too much of a hassle. And now, like, you know, I kind of feel like unless you have something extremely special, like in general, like, you know, there's, if I was doing a wrestling podcast, there's probably 10,000 other wrestling podcasts out there.
Well, I mean, you named a wrestling show after your wrestling podcast. I mean, not a whole lot of people have that. I mean, I know there's a few, like Deadlock. Something like that. They have a wrestling show that goes with their wrestling podcast. But I'm saying, like, if somehow the podcast was to be intertwined into the show and made a part of, almost like a Mean Gene Okerlund type character who was doing like a live podcast in front of the people, and just like have it be like a live podcast segment or whatever, we just have like somebody interviewing the wrestlers and kind of getting an idea on it, and then like cutting just a clip of that and putting that as like, maybe not even as a pot, like as a, on an RSS feed, just like on the YouTube show or something. We're like, here's the podcast segment, because only romanticizing the fact that the show itself was born out of a podcast and the namesake comes from a podcast.
Yeah. For me, it'd be something I'd have to pay somebody to do. Like for me, I'm just kind of over doing that kind of thing myself. I realized that it was me missing being on the radio, and it's just two completely different things. I mean, they just get run different. And like I said, like it's one of those things that if I had somebody I could pay for it, that's maybe one thing. Cause I'm also, and you know, anybody that's on my show would know, I'm not one of these people that asks people to do things for free for me, because I've been in that position. I know a lot of promoters kind of take that stance with some of their workers, like, oh, like, you know, here's like 10 bucks. Like I can't be that guy.
The amount of boundary crossing in wrestling at this point, like, you know, when they talk about, like, they always say, get better, get better, get better. The pay structure has remained the same in professional wrestling on the independent level for the last 30 years, probably. And
well, there was, Chris Jericho just did a whole show about ECW, and he talked about Paul Heyman paying him $250.
Right. It's funny, but like that is considered a good payday on independent wrestling.
Yeah.
Like still is considered. And what was that, 30 years ago?
Yeah. And we can talk about it off air, but there was somebody who like kept like promising me all this stuff when I was doing my podcast, and like every time I would bring up pay, they would completely like just jump over that and start getting into something else. And like,
the
you know,
boundaries in that, in the wrestling business for like the ability to just use people, like yeah. they're like just a spoke on the wheel, like a cog in the machine, take it out, put a new one in, take it out, put a new one in. It makes it dehumanizes people. And it's very abusive, and it's very predatory. It's very manipulative. But like something about the wrestling business attracts these people to it. It's bizarre. And that needs to kind of expire a little bit.
Yeah, there's. And I hate saying it's the people that have been in wrestling for years, but it is.
The old guard. Yeah.
People sure. need to stop acting like, I know it's the worst word to use, but there's some promoters that still act like carnies. Like you talk to them and the entire time you're talking to them, you're in their back of your mind. You're like, this guy's trying to screw me. I know that they're saying something where they're trying to screw me, you know, but I just kind of like smile and act like, oh, like, yeah, like you, like, you know, I smile and play the dumb guy when in the back of my mind, I've already made up my mind because I know what those people talking are like. Like, no offense to any of them, but I worked with Dennis. No offense.
Take offense. Go ahead.
I worked with Dennis Carluzzo. I know what's when somebody's trying to screw with you. Like he wasn't even just the king of it, but he was also the king of showing other people how to look for it too. Like, hey, if this guy ever says this, or if this guy ever does that, like I worked with guys that were doing it a lot longer than them. So
became a carny whisperer.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, like I, and those kind of promoters drive me crazy. And one of the things, like, you know, all of the people that work for me, probably sometimes a little bit too much, but I communicate everything. The last thing I ever want someone to feel if they work on the Wrestling Independent is this guy screwed me somehow.
It's like I started picturing when we were talking about independent promoter, you know, like in Spider-Man, where it's like, oh, the ad said 3 minutes, you beat him in two, you only get this much. That's kind of pinpoint accurate. The promoters are kind of scumbags. And I started picturing like Sylvester the Cat. And there's like one for you, one for me, two for you, one, two for me, three for you, one, two, three for me. And it is really like a exploitive.
Yeah.
They for sure want to get the least. They want to spend the least for the most, for the most amount of work that somebody else can do for them. And they're going to profit off of the hard work of others and really not give much back.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if I didn't, so I didn't graduate high school, but I teach high school now. Like I had to go to school to get my night diploma. Like, you know, like I went to community college, stuff like that. The reason for that is because all of my friends were people that did stuff like that. Like if I didn't end up like teaching, I would definitely be doing some illegal stuff. Like, you know, my sister's the kind of person that goes through her dry goods and starts calling companies saying that she got bad products because she knows certain companies will like send you boxes of it. Like I had a friend growing up that ended up like being one of the biggest distributors for drugs on the East Coast. Like I know people, I know what it's like when you're trying to screw people. I know what that sounds like. Alarm bells go off.
Skizam.
Yeah. Like I get that. That's what like everybody I grew up around did. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you had taken these shortcuts, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Yeah.
I mean, go take some shortcuts and let's have a different conversation next week.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's as soon as I hear certain things, I'm just like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, you're not telling me the whole story and you're not telling me the whole story for a reason. And it's just the fact that It like sometimes I want to hold a class for some wrestlers and be like, this is how you find out if someone's trying to screw you.
You know, I want to, I you remember Jude?
Mm-hmm.
Jude and I had this idea for a gimmick that we used to talk about all the time. You know, they had like Lex Luger was like the narcissist.
Yeah.
Well, we have a narcissist who's really just somebody who scams people and lies and uses people and then gets called out on it and it takes zero accountability. Like people can prove his lies, but he doesn't own up to those lies. Like,
not to get political, but didn't we just have a president that did that for a number of years and people still listen to him?
Yeah, give that gimmick to some. And we were talking about this gimmick back in 2005.
Yeah.
But yes, a narcissistic, and it wasn't as part of the zeitgeist as much as it is nowadays. Like that was an unknown word back when Lex Luger was using
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And now it gets thrown around left and right.
Right, exactly. I told this joke on here once. I think it only applies because we're talking about it. But do you know how many narcissists it takes to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
None. They use gaslighting.
That's good.
You're like, that was good. I can tell you're super tired.
Yeah, no, it's just... haven't had my coffee yet. Like, it's just one of those days.
Just a couple more things, and then I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake. I do a segment on here called Audio Time Travel, right? Mm-hmm. So we were talking about the on-the-record conversations. I like to treat these podcasts like they're time capsules, right? So, no, the... you know, this is going to outlive us, but at least it's going to, let's say, go to the next 20 years, right? So in 2044, your kids come across this, your students come across this, your loved ones come across this recording. In this moment, in these next moments, you're speaking directly to those people, the people who love you the most and who have seeked this out as far as the effort goes to kind of see a little bit closer who Mike actually is. What are the words that you're saying to those people as a time capsule of 2024 version of Mike? What are you telling them?
Honestly, I just want to make sure that everybody's proud of what I did. I want to make sure that the legacy that I'm trying to leave behind, whether it's for wrestling, whether it's with my family, is something that makes them proud. One of the things that I'm trying to do with the Wrestling Independent, and you were there, so you can completely vouch for me on this. Wrestling in the early 2000s in Philly was probably one of the most exciting things. I mean, Jerry the King Lawler even did a comic book where Philly was kind of like the Hollywood of wrestling, right? And that's what I'm trying to do. And I know that it's a long road ahead of me. But I always want to make sure that my legacy's there. I've shared this a couple times with people, and I'll kind of share it here. A lot of people came out of 2020 a little bit changed, or came out of 2020, 2021 a little bit changed. By January, between January 2019 to January 2021, I lost my three best friends in high school due to different things. One had a drug overdose, one had a massive heart attack, another one was a drug thing as well. But in December 2020, my dad goes into the hospital because he had some bleeding coming out of his throat. By December 27th, he was dead. And one of my friends that I lost, was who was kind of a second brother to me, passed away. So a lot of me looks at it as if I'm here and they're not, I need to do something good with my life. On top of that, I also know that, and it might come off morbid, that I probably have a lot more limited time than some people, because I also have 3 different autoimmune diseases, 2 of them which usually by the time you're 50, you need some kind of organ transplant. So my hope would be that anybody that looks back is proud of the things that I've done and proud of the, at least the effort that I put in to try to get those things done.
I'm sorry to hear about the disease. What are the autoimmune diseases?
I have ulcerative colitis, which most people know about. I also have autoimmune hepatitis, which attacks the liver, which I always love telling people I have autoimmune hepatitis, because half of them are like, oh, you did a lot of drinking? Like, no, it's my body attacking. And then I have another one called primary sclerosing cholangitis, which is attacks the bile duct of the liver.
Oh.
Obviously you know the name, but any wrestling fans that follow Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Kevin McElvaney, I have a very high chance of getting the kind of cancer that his wife just died from.
Oh, wow.
So for me, it's that. And also, this kind of goes off on the side, I also have resistant hypertension. So I'm on like 4 different blood pressure meds, and my blood pressure is still like 135, 140 over 90, 95. So like, I understand, I think more than some people do, that, you know, I could be healthy for the next 20 years, or within 3 years, something happens that I hope that they would catch on time.
So it's almost like a race to success at this point, right?
Which is one of the reasons that I go so hard. It's the reason that I don't consider the Wrestling Independent a promotion where you can, like, you know, there are certain promotions you can go to and you know that you can, you know, try out new things. You know that, you know, it's just going to be a longer evolution. I'm really looking for people that, I'll put it this way. I've had 2 wrestlers have to pull out of bookings because they had a national booking come up for my show. I'd rather have those kind of wrestlers than people that are still trying to figure out who they are. And I think that there's a lot of promotions that do that, but I think it's time for Philly to have that promotion again. Like, you know, we were Ring of Honor when they first started. We were CZW at one of the times, one of the biggest promotions in, you know, the US. ECW, obviously, like, you know, Philly craves that kind of talent. And I think it's one of the reasons that
they've lost that love and feeling.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the reasons that you go to some shows in Philly and there's only like 100 to 150 people there. And really, we should be filling shows with, you know, 1,000 people. And I know for the Wrestling Independent, I just started. It's going to take me a few years to get there. Right. But yeah. I want to gain that reputation sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, especially like, well, go back to thinking about Cage of Death 3 and that really like packed house. It really, really, really has you feeling like nostalgic for what could still be. Like,
yeah. You know, one of the great things about my show, the last time, there was a lot of people that were there that the last time they were at a show was in the 90s with ECW. And like, those are the people that are really looking for, you know, something to ignite that passion again.
The wrestling business hasn't, I mean, like going to the top, like WWE, they're making the most money that they've ever made. at this moment. Like, they're filling arenas. Like, there's never, like, there hasn't been an alternative to WWE like there is with AEW since WCW went out of business. Mm-hmm. So, like, there are opportunities. There is chances to tap into this fan marketplace. And you know that they're here in Philly. You know that Philly fans crave wrestling, and they kind of gave up on it. And then some people are probably rediscovering wrestling through this new shift in the fact that, like, now WWE and UFC are part of the same thing. And, you know, even fans who, you know, gave up on wrestling to be MMA fans are, like, tracking back, you know what I mean? Kind of taking a little peek at what's going on. And if you want to take a peek at what I'm doing, folks, wrestling fans, come see what we're doing over here. Come see what, you know, what we've got to offer.
And it's also proved that Philly still does draw those crowds. I mean, look at MLW, look at Battleground Championship Wrestling, look at GCW when they come in. Places still come here because wrestling has that fan base. There's nobody local that's tapped into it for a very long time.
Right. It's tough, I think, for me and being a Philly talent who's been a Philly talent for probably the last 22 years. I've done a lot. I've been gatekept out of, I feel like there's been Philly companies that are like, oh yeah, we're using the people who we like, and we're the popularity of the people that we like, you know what, go be over in Delaware if you want. Like, I felt like I've been gatekept out of it for a very long time, as in I'm gonna kind of steal spotlight or something from their faves. I'm almost at the point, and I think you're on the same page with me on that. Like, it's time to, like, stop trying to force out what could be helpful. It's time to stop getting in your own way.
Yeah.
Like, as far as, like, independent wrestling, it needs to appear like something somebody'd want to see or, like, want to show up to.
And also, like, I'm one of those people that I don't just like, I hate people that complain. I hate people that talk about situations that are going on and all they do is complain about it. Cause I'm sure you can think of 1,000 people that you've met probably in the last week. That's what they do. And my feeling is, instead of complaining about it, let's do something about it. Like, I love Labor of Love. I've been to some of their shows, great shows. I've been to High Tension, good shows. But I think there's room for something else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I constantly say there's more than one way up the mountain. There's definitely so many cliche things that you could say to say, like, you know, I always say about redefining what the next level is. Like, you can make waking up and making your bed the next level. You can, whatever the next level is to you, if the next level is somewhere outside of you, you might not ever get there. Like, it's got to be decisions you make about, like, celebrating stuff.
And that's also plays back into, you know, the idea that it doesn't matter what gender you are, you're still going to get the same respect, because there's a lot of people trying to do their own wrestling promotions. You have a lot of people trying to run women's promotions, but I really think the next quote unquote evolution is a hybrid. Like, let's make it who's the best, not, you know, here's a men's title, here's a women's title. Or, like, you know, if we're really trying to show equality today, instead of segregating, let's bring everything together and really just say whoever's the best, that's what they get.
Equal rights and equal lefts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do any impressions at all, Mike?
No, not really any impressions. I'm like the worst person for stuff like that.
Okay. Well, okay. This is the way we wrap it up. I usually say, hypothetically, I've gifted you this show. This is your very first episode of Evolving with Mike Fresh. In a very Jerry Springer's final thought type way, the most valuable takeaways, the most important parts that could help inspire folks to be a better version of themselves tomorrow, what would you tell them now?
So, go out and experience things. And if you are really a wrestling fan, have a chance to go out and go to the shows that are around your that are around where you live. I got to see people like CM Punk and Colt Cabana come to Philly their first time. I got to hang out with people like Reckless Youth and Mike Quackenbush before there was even a Chikara and back when they started it. I got to see people like, you know, John Moxley start to wrestle. I got to see the Briscoes when they were still teenagers. I got to see people like Sonjay Dutt and, you know, people that have really blown up. And it wasn't even going backstage that was something that was big for me. It was being able to now look back at wrestling and seeing these people that have met thousands of people that I'm sure I'm just one in like, you know, a flash in all these people that they got to meet. But for me, it was cool knowing that I was there on their journey when they were people that were still trying to make their names. And also to fight for what you believe in and don't let anybody hold you back. I'm going to leave with a story. So CM Punk's first show in Philly was actually for 3PW. He went to 3PW. They did a double shot where they then went to Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. Because of some of the people that I knew in the wrestling business, while I had seen some stuff that Punk had done, what he also had at that time, even though it was so early in his career, was a reputation that in all of the locker rooms, he told everybody, he even told people at his job, which at the time was the Sunglass Hut in the mall over in Chicago, that he was going to be the best wrestler in the world. And for me, seeing him go from a nobody to who CM Punk is today has, while, again, I've met him maybe for like 5-10 minutes here or there, that was incredible for me to be on that ride. And in coming to shows and coming to things like that, seeing people who you might not have heard about, the stories that you'll have down the road will just be amazing.
I think that CM Punk might have been one of the bridges, one of the builders of the bridge between, like, when they go, oh, stop being a mark, to going like, you can be. It's okay. It's okay to, like, I think, I remember John Zandig kind of bashing CM Punk and Mondo for, like, talking with the fans and interacting with the fans online and, like, writing their blogs and, like, involving the fans and, like, being one of them. And this is a different time. So I'm going to say again how it was a different time. It was frowned upon in the business. So I remember him being like, you know, these guys are one of the marks, and they're like involving them in like their daily life, kind of blurring the lines of kayfabe. at that point. I think that might have been one of the maybe the factors in why wrestlers couldn't be marks, because it would blur the kayfabe lines. Mm-hmm. Kayfabe was way more strict back then. I've actually, and please use this. If this applies, if you can use it, please use it. I've started saying everything with social media is such a worked shoot nowadays, and you can't tell what's kayfabe and what's the shoot. I say grayfabe. It's all in a gray area. So if you can apply a work, if you want to talk about a work shoot and call it grayfabe, I'll feel like I contributed something to the wrestling world if I have everybody starting to say that, if that becomes a trend.
Well, I'll definitely try to use it some of the next time. I'm going to be seeing Tiberius Asante, who just did a huge angle about kidnapping Ruthless Lala on Twitter for like a couple months, and I'll give that to him later today.
There you go. That's rad. Normally, I would say whatever you told me your best impression was, I normally would say take that impression and say how we close the show. Is normally whatever your impression is, you'd say the phrase is be fun, have safe, keep evolving. That's normally how we close with an impression. Whatever your best impression is, say be fun, have safe, keep evolving. But you said you don't have a good impression. So maybe
I'll
just
try, make I'll one try one. Okay. I'll try one. It was be fun.
Be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Is that Christopher Walken?
That's a poor Christopher Walken, yeah.
I picked it up. I picked it right up. I knew what you were doing. So it's not as poor as you think. Be kinder to yourself. And this message goes to everybody. If this is the first time checking out Evolving with Cordy Castle and you catch nothing else, and if you're still here with us after an hour and a half, I appreciate the value of your time and your effort. I want to make sure to promote you to be kinder to yourself, be kinder to others, support people. If you exist, let me know you exist. If you're going through something and you ever feel like you don't have anybody to talk to, you don't have friends, my DMs are wide open. I'm right here. I can talk to you. Be fun. Have safe. Keep evolving. Show's over.